We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to In the Know. We are now going to answer the questions you submitted to us, and we are going to have a lot of fun with it. So without further ado, because you guys have been waiting for a very long time, we're going to get started. Mason, I think we can do this our regular way of just going back and forth. I am happy to kick this off for you. So question number one, JJ's Burner says, are B.I. and Zion going to be upset about Zoe, or are the media guys overhyping it for clicks?
I guess B.I. is generally a quiet guy, and so I don't think he's been pushed that much unless I missed something on the Lonzo situation. I feel like more noise has come from Zion saying that, you know, hope to re-sign him. I feel like it's a, you know, this. Are they going to miss him? Yeah. I think that they clearly like had a positive relationship, but also like, I feel like it's overblown. It's something to another thing to tie this back to the last podcast. Another thing just to slam the Pelicans for if that's your jam. So I'm not too worried. And if it's about Zoe, it's not really about Zoe. It's about, well, we lost Zoe and we didn't do as much as I wanted to replace him, which is, you know, I feel like they're going to like Devontae a lot. So I hope that that's not, you know, something that they're too concerned about, but I don't know. I think if they're upset, it's about the entire big picture, less about like a guy, because this is a business. And I think even younger players get that.
Yeah, I agree. I think one thing an executive told me once is that guys are generally, they feel strongly when they don't want a guy on the team. And when it comes to keeping a guy on the team, they're generally ambivalent, except for very rare cases. And so I think this is one of the situations where if the Pelicans are winning, they are not going to care. Cool.
Yep.
Next question.
Yeah. So this one's from Coach Jerry, at Coach Jerry 3. And the question is, how big of a difference will Willie Green make on this young roster compared to Stan Van Grumpy? And I mostly just wanted to read that because he called him Stan Van Grumpy.
Yeah, I have no idea, right? You know, like, I don't know if there's any, like, tangible evidence that there's one methodology that works better than the other. The prevailing thing for me has always been talent. And so that's going to drive more wins. But if things about Stan that people say are true, and things about Willie that people say are true, then the Pelicans players are in for a pretty big change when it comes to the coaching styles. They're, you know, one is a guy who is relentlessly negative and overcritical, and one is a guy who is built to be very emotionally intelligent and just in tune with what the players need and what they want to hear. You know, Ryan Pannone, the Pelicans G League coach, did a podcast with True Hoop, and he said while they were in Vegas, he was observing Willie Green the whole time, and he compared him to Ted Lasso in terms of just knowing how to push guys' button and really bring them together and being really in control over his own emotions. And so I don't know if that's going to translate to more wins. I do think that the team is going to have more fun time playing.
I think that's really fair, because I've said for years that a coach shouldn't have to be the guy to motivate an NBA player to try harder. I think that responsibility falls on the players who are professionals to do that. That being said, I used to be just firmly on one side of the camp here. I've come off. I've loosened up on that a little bit, and I think that I'm willing to concede that for certain players, it does matter. I think broadly for most of the league that it doesn't, like, your coach isn't going to help make a tangible impact on how hard you play. I think that there are some players who that's not true and who really does matter. And so I don't know how many of those players are on the Pelicans right now. That's one thing I can't say. I have no idea, but I think it's fair to say that there are at least a couple who, you know, maybe will are motivated that way and will play harder because they, you know, they like a guy more. And so I think you might see an uptick, but I don't think it's, you know, a huge difference.
Yeah, I agree. I think we are both in agreement on that point. So I'm going to move on to the next question, which is going to be about one of my favorite upcoming players. This is from Giddy for Giddy. It was at Woke Lonzo. I think it's going to be one of the few Lonzo fans stands that are going to stay around. He's generally been fun to interact with and not a dick. So we keep him around. What is Trey Murphy's role over the course of the season?
Man, we could probably, I was looking at a question too, that touches on a broader topic that ties into this, but what I think, man, I would like to see him start. I think that it sets him up best for success. I think we saw in summer league enough to say that he's got a skill set that can make a contribution quickly. I don't know if I'm not saying he's going to be a massive net positive in rookie year. I think that would be ambitious, but I do think if you're going to try to maximize his skill set, putting him alongside the players like Zion and BI and and Valanciunas and whoever you start at guard, I think there's enough shot creation out there to get him really high quality looks. And if he can continue the strong defensive start he had in Vegas, as far as overall IQ and just defensive awareness, I think that I would like to see him as a starter. Maybe it's only like a 20 minutes per game starter. That probably would make a good bit of sense to me, but that's where I'd like to see him slot in. And hey, maybe preseason shows that that's not a good idea, but at least to start preseason game one, I would love to see Murphy in the starting lineup.
I agree. Why not? I just don't see, let him show you why not, if that's the case. And you're right. I completely agree about the shot creation and the quality of looks that he's going to get. And I think that's going to be at its best with the starters rather than off the bench. And I think he's going to be low touch. People say low usage, but I really think what they mean is touch. And I think he's going to be low touch enough to where he functions well with the starters, and the touches that he's going to get are just going to be very, very open looks. So I'm excited to see him and how they deploy him, because I really think he can be a versatile player. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point in his career, maybe even this year, he's playing the small ball five. He's a huge dude.
Yeah. I think I'm looking forward to it. And I really hope that we see that in the preseason, or at least you see him get a decent number of minutes with the starters. Maybe he's not starting preseason game one, but they can get him minutes with the starting lineup and see how it fits. Let's talk a little broader then. So actually a good friend of mine, Andrew, so A Wind M1, I asked about anticipated rotations if the season started tomorrow. And so I think this is that last question about Murphy's a good segue. And so let's talk about the, I mean, we can pretty easily agree that we know who the other, so we know that Zion, Valanciunas and Ingram are starting. So that means, you know, what do you feel like for the rest of the starting lineup and overall rotations? If, what do you think is going to happen? And then what do you want to happen?
What I think will happen is Devontae and Nikhil start. What I want to happen is Trey and one of Devontae or Nikhil. And I go back and forth on this, and depending on what they need, I think I want Devontae over Nikhil if I'm starting Trey. Just to give me a little bit better creation and a little more high volume shooting. And let Na get his touches and shots up in a less starter heavy rotation. But I'm happy to close games out with Akil.
I've gone back and forth on this as well. And actually I may have gone. So previously I was in your camp. I was saying let's go with Murphy and Devontae. I can see the argument for Nikhil now. And I feel like the reason is it's a similar concept to Trey Murphy. I want to set Nikhil up for success as quickly as possible. And whereas I'm confident in Devontae, he's clearly already carved out what his role is and what he's good at. And obviously there's room to improve. Obviously he's got awful at the rim. And so there's still, I think the case for Graham also is if you create more space for him, he can start to improve on that number and gain more confidence inside. But I think that for Nikhil, it's as important. I mean, I think he's one of the biggest X factors for how this team goes this season. And so if you put him on the floor with Zion, with Ingram, even with Valanciunas, you take some pressure off of him. But also your argument is very a salient one too, that you know, maybe he doesn't have as many possessions and you want to give him the opportunities, the reps to really improve. And maybe that's better suited for him in a six man type role.
Yeah. Well, I think the other pro Nikhil argument is defense. And I think
true. Yep.
If Nikhil is your best backcourt defender. He just is. And he has a knack
for better or for worse. Yeah.
I mean, he has a knack for generating deflections and steals and getting in the passing lanes. He's also a big guard. You know, he's around 6'6". And so if he's the smallest guy on the floor for you, then I like that. You know, I like that proposition. And maybe the Pelicans are able to disrupt and play a more aggressive style of defense than, you know, say with someone like Devontae. And so it's really going to come down to, hey, our offense is probably going to be good enough with all of those guys. And if we can get our defense really good too, then shoot, maybe that is the unit.
Is there any world you see Najee starting?
Yeah, I mean, I can see it. I think in that world for sure, Devontae starts.
I agree with that. I think you need a high volume 3-point shooter if you're going to start Najee. So I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, I prefer to let Najee rock out on the bench. Just let him do everything he needs to. And again, happy closing with him.
You said you'd be closing with him.
If we need to, right?
Okay. So like, yeah.
I would like there not to be a set closing lineup.
Yeah.
I would like there to be, hey, we close based on what's needed, unlike Stan Van Gundy.
Bledsoe till we die.
Right. And so, yeah, that's the goal for me is like, okay, we need to close small. Like, yeah, let's close with Najee and Trey, right? We need to close athletic. Let's close with Jackson, right? We need Jonas in there. Okay, fine. We're closing with Jonas. Whatever is needed, do so. And I think Willie Green is going to be much more willing to do so than Stan ever was. I guess that would be my follow-up question for you is how many players can you see the Pelicans closing games with?
Man, probably so if you so Zion, Ingram, Valance, Eunice, Nikhil, Graham, Najee, Murphy's very questionable. I mean, he could show out and he can be a guy who can defend at a high enough level and make threes. And so maybe that's a guy you need, but I think maybe less of an expectation on him to close games as a rookie. But I mean, that's at least, I mean, if you include him, that's eight.
Can you see a world where Jackson closes?
Man, that's tough. I don't see it. Not yet.
What about Satoransky?
No, I don't.
What about Josh Hart?
Nope.
You don't see a world where Josh Hart closes games?
Man, I just don't see the. I mean, injuries. That's what I see. I don't see a role. I mean, like, unless he can start shooting at a higher percentage, like, no, I don't.
I don't know, man. Small ball, I can see it.
But if small ball, I just see other better options. Like if you want to go Nikhil, Nikhil, Devontae, Ingram, Zion, and then I don't know. Najee just feels like a better Josh Hart to me. So why would I play with Hart?
I think you could play both of them if you want to close small.
And who are you taking out though?
I mean, you would just.
I guess Nikhil maybe.
I mean, you could put Nikhil in there. It'd be Nikhil, Josh, B.I., Zion, Najee. That could be a lineup.
It's a very switchable lineup. So, yeah, there is value there. Yeah. Yeah, I say no at first. I'm happy to be proven wrong because that would mean Josh Hart playing better than I expect. So I'm at, like, honestly, at full strength, like 7.5 players with the half being if Trey Murphy really, really shows out.
Well, the good news is that's – many more players than they had an option for last year.
They had four players and they had to play five. I guess they don't have to play five, but
I think they had three players.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, okay. No, that is that's interesting question. Kind of related to that. AJ Vallon asks, rank them list most to least likely to be on the roster next year, I'm guessing at the end of the season. So he goes Hart, Valanciunas, Kyra, and Satoransky.
Ooh, interesting. So we're saying by the end of the season or past the trade deadline. Okay, yeah. Yes. So I think Hart's most likely to be gone. That contract, like you've already referenced, is made for trade. So I put him number one. I think Satoransky is a close second, if not first, just because he's the one whose role is hardest to define. And if you're playing him, that means you're not playing some of the young, like Kyra is spent. He's probably out of the rotation as long as Satoransky's on the team. So it really depends on how highly they view Kyra. And then I'd say I think Kyra's third and JV is fourth, but I have Kyra and Valanciunas close because Valanciunas is expiring and who knows, the Pelicans could look at what it might cost to resign him and think that that's not worth it, especially after what happened with Steven Adams. So I think that JV and Kyra might be closer than you may expect.
That's interesting. Yeah. Satoransky is also an expiring, which I think.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree with your order. I would say Satoransky over Josh Hart just because if you don't find a trade for Josh Hart, you can re-roll his contract and and be in the same spot. Whereas Satoransky, if you don't find a trade for him, he's a free agent. And I'd be shocked if they bring him back, you know?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. That's a fair point.
Cool. Pretty similar. We're on the same page again. What you got next for me?
Let's see. What we got?
There are so many questions.
Yeah, they are. See, we already hit the so Zion the GOAT 8 hit the question around, or we already talked about the favorite starting lineup projection and who we think will Willie Green will start. What, all right, so this is good from Caleb Lampert. We started touching on this last episode, but which Western Conference teams do you feel the Pelicans are definitively better than?
Okay, let's start at the bottom. I feel like they're better than OKC. I feel like they are better than Houston. I feel like they are better than Sacramento. I feel like they are better than Minnesota. And then I would say they're definitively better than San Antonio. Well, one more. I say they're definitively better than Memphis.
We have the same list. I think, so we talked about Memphis, like I said, last podcast. I guess, so the Spurs, like over under pretty much dictates this too. Like that it puts the Pelicans above them. So I don't think that's a controversial take. I feel like it's kind of a softball question almost. The only controversy would based on Vegas over unders would be Memphis. I think everything else that you said is pretty well aligned to what most people seem to be thinking about the Pelicans. The Kings over under is 36.5. The Pelicans are at what, 39.5? Yeah. So, and then Memphis is at 41.5. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Memphis is, or the Pelicans are a better team than Memphis. But they're the only close call for me. I think everything else is pretty easy. Are there any other teams you think they're close enough to say that, you know, you wouldn't at all, like, assuming like reasonable health expectations for all teams, is there any team if the Pelicans end up over them, you're like, yeah, that wouldn't shock me, but even if you don't think it's likely?
Yeah, Portland, Golden State, and even the Clippers this year without Kawhi.
Yeah, I think so. Any chance for Dallas? So can the Pelicans win the division?
Oh yeah, sure. I'll put Dallas in there with that group for sure.
Yeah,
especially because they have Jason Kidd, man.
I have a hard time with Golden State. I feel like, again, the assumption I put on the table is that, you know, so Clay comes back and he's good,
right? But he's coming back in like January, dude.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yep, and the Warriors they got better this offseason, right? I mean, they added who they had?
Otto Porter. Yeah. They added Iguodala back. They added a few shooters, I think.
Yeah, so I struggle with them a little bit, but I think I'm with you on Portland. Although the Nance trade makes that tougher because that was a great move for Portland. I think Nance fits really well with the Blazers, and so. But again, I'm backtracking my own question to ask you. So which ones wouldn't surprise you? And so I think that's fair. I think the Clippers are very. I think I'm most in alignment with you on the Clippers of all the teams you named, which may be a bit counterintuitive. Like, but their over under is 44.5.
So what do you think about the Nuggets? Because
Murray.
Yeah. I mean, Jokic is incredible. So he probably doesn't need Murray, but like, I think their depth is, well, yeah. I mean, I think their depth is worse than last year, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was hard for them because they're pretty constraint. So they got Jermichael Green back, who I like, but he's like at best he's a depth piece. But yeah, they really didn't do that much. Jeff Green was a good ad. I think Jeff Green helps. I don't know how much longer in his career Jeff Green gonna help for, but I think he still helps.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can put them on the same tier as all those other teams. Basically, it's like, yes, the Pelicans, I say if everything breaks right for them and things break mostly wrong or decently wrong for other teams other than like LA and Utah, I think the Pelicans have a chance. Right? Is that fair?
Yeah. So you're not giving rookie ears to Bones yet?
Oh, no. No, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
But whose question? I don't remember whose question that was. That was mine, right? You're up.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I'm up. Okay, shoot. I actually closed out of the questions. I'm an idiot. Here, pick one while I find the questions.
Okay. I'm not... B-Day, will AD ever thank New Orleans?
No. No.
That's almost a joke one. I can find another one. Yeah, we agree. Let's see. We haven't talked about a little Herb Jones action. So the Big Red Chief asks, what is your take on Herb Jones being a small ball fly with this team? And do you see him starting the season with the Pels or in Birmingham?
I love the idea of Herb Jones being a small ball five, and I think that he probably starts the season with the Pelicans because he is on a real contract, but I think he spends a lot of time in Birmingham.
I think that's probably fair. I'm just thinking about he's on that real three-year contract, so he probably starts in New Orleans. I don't see a real pathway to minutes. So like, it's cool in theory, like, sure. But I think it would have to be heavy, lots of injuries for him to get that shot, or just like, you know, late game situations. It's not a clear pathway to minutes for him out of the gate.
So X Zep Pepe or 420 Moonwalker asks, how bad will attendance be this year with vaccination/negative test requirements? Well, I think if they're not limiting the number of people who can come into the Smoothie King Center, then I don't think vaccination/negative test is going to be a barrier for people to attend, because I think Orleans Parish is, I think 72% of adults have received at least one dose of the vaccine already. So I think if you're someone that goes out of their way to attend Pelicans games, you're probably going to go out of the way to attend Pelicans games.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And if attendance dips, it's not because of, like, this is a leading question that's bullshit in my opinion. Like, it's not because of vaccination or negative test requirements. It's because people are not comfortable going to a sporting event like this. I mean, I think,
That plus, like, you know, you have to consider how much of people's discretionary income COVID has impacted. So like, if people who would have had the funds to go to games and do events like these, you know, a lot of people don't this time around.
Yeah. Yeah. Ida too. I mean, but the combination is just not great for, you know, so, I just think we're creating a false indicator of sorts here. I don't think that's the driver between for any, you know, attendance dip that may occur.
Yeah, I agree. Next question. There are so many to pick from, but a lot of them are kind of the same.
We've got a couple. We got a couple on the extras that are more fun instead of basketball related. If you want to go there.
Yeah, I'm gonna let you go there. I'm gonna answer one okay. Basketball one.
Yep.
Before we do that. So it says, from Who Dat Boss, any word on what Zion and BI are working on to improve their game? No, like, specifics, but I do know that they had team workouts in Phoenix,
They are some of the players are in Charlotte at the moment, and next week they're supposed to have voluntary workouts in Nashville. So, but no idea what they're working on specifically. No clue. I mean, I know with it, Brandon, the focus for him was to get his weight up and to become stronger. So that way, when his weight inevitably dips when he's in season, it dips to a higher level than usual.
So we can play the four on defense and the two on offense.
Sure. Yeah. He weighs less than most point guards.
Yeah. Okay. So Mayor of Metri asks, is cereal a soup?
Is cereal a soup? Yes.
Why?
Because it's food suspended within a liquid that can be heated up and drink warm. So if ramen noodle soup is a thing, then cereal is a thing as well. I mean, yeah, yeah. Cereal is a soup as well.
I think that's totally fair. I mean, there's nothing about soup that means it has to be warm, right? And that's not the definition.
That is true as well. Is true as well.
It's basically cold soup. Yeah. Like, I think that's pretty non-debatable.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things, right? So in technicality, the cereal is like the flakes, right? But if you put them in milk, then it becomes a soup. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
So if you just ate cereal raw, of course, that's not a soup, right? The soup is the act of putting it in the liquid, in the broth.
Actually, you know what? I stand corrected. I just looked up, because this is what I do, I looked up definition of soup.
Oh, God.
it does say a liquid dish typically made by boiling meat, fish, or vegetables in stock or water. And so I guess, yeah, so by definition, maybe cereal is not soup.
What about oatmeal? Like, don't you like boil? Like, I mean, you don't necessarily boil, but it gets really hot, right? To make the process of making oatmeal.
Probably a better argument to be made there than cereal, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I think it's a soup.
Yeah. We've got two more from friends of at least Twitter or Bourbon Street Shots friends. So one's gonna be very embarrassing to answer on my part, but Angie and Charles both asked questions. Which one? I feel like maybe you want to just end with those two, or do you have others?
Sorry, can you repeat that question? I totally spaced out.
I had no questions. Basically, just asking. We got a couple more questions from Angie and from Charles LaRocca. I figured you want to end with those.
Yeah, let's do that.
Cool. All right, so let's go to Angie first. As an author, I have to ask, last books you read?
Oh, yeah. I'm in the middle of reading The Drunkard's Walk. It's a nonfiction book about basically the theory of randomness and how people overestimate the ability people underestimate the impact of randomness on their lives. So like when people are like looking for patterns, when people are trying to do any kind of analysis, their intuition, their gut generally leads them astray and leads them to making predictions that are, that they think there might be a pattern behind, but when in reality, it's just randomness dictating the series of outcomes that they're observing. And so it's called The Drunkard's Walk, How Randomness Rules Our Lives. And been listening to the audiobook of it as well as reading it, because it's nice to get in the car and just listen to a chapter or two if I'm going somewhere.
Nice. Yeah, I think Del Demps would argue the same.
Man, it makes some really good points. I mean, I recommend like anyone that's like trying to like get into any kind of data related field, or even get into like software engineering or get into business or sales or any kind of that stuff to read this book at some point. But yeah, obviously if you're not in fields that work with a lot of numbers or rely on things like that, then you know, it's probably not going to give you much practical use, but it may be good for your knowledge either way.
So similar to you, I think most recent book I've read is more just, it's based on, it's for my own, like, it's related to my job and just like learning things about like my field and what I'm working on. I haven't, like, Angie's gonna unfollow me with this, but I haven't read for pleasure in years. Like, I just like don't budget the time in my day to do it. And like, that's bad, but I'm much more like just reading shorter articles or reading shorter books, like I said, related to my field of work, and not really reading books for pleasure, which is unfortunate, but that's just, you know, people prioritize different things, and I feel like that's just something I haven't done a lot of in a while.
I feel like you would really like this book because it uses some, you know, examples from like the business world and how like executives try to make decisions. And basically, like, one of the examples it uses is you have these big like executives in Hollywood who are responsible for like selecting movies, and they're basically judged upon the, like, you know, how like the movie like does for their studio at the box office, you know, how much money it makes for them. And so you'll have an executive who picks a string of movies and they're extremely successful, and then the next few string of movies that their studio produces are not that successful, and they get fired and they bring in someone else. They pay him like $30, $40 million a year to do the same job. And what happens is, after they fire that person, the few movies that were already in the pipeline while that person was still employed end up to be like massive successes. And they're like, okay, well, what happened? Like, do these major executives who get paid millions of dollars actually have any impact over what's going to be a successful movie or not? And the uncomfortable truth of the matter is, it's just like random. It's totally random. And there's no, you know, like, that's not a reliable predictive factor. And then, you know, companies do that with CEOs all the time. It's like, we're going to bring in the CEO and pay them, you know, like millions of dollars, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, our company stock is going to go up. Oh, it's like, was that the CEO? Well, chances are it probably wasn't the CEO that led to the stock going up or down. And then they really have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, and you could even like make the comparison to whether it's business world or sports world, like how the best way to manage randomness is to have more of a long-term vision. And a lot of people don't feel like they can do that because they're, you know, if they don't get results before then, they'll be fired. They won't be able to see that and light at the end of the tunnel. And so I think that's interesting. And I even think about, so you don't, do you watch Billions?
No, I don't.
So that the season just restarted they basically cut it halfway through before it, like when COVID hit, and they just restarted it. But the foundation of, so it's about this, you know, an amazing like hedge fund manager. So amazing in air quotes, obviously, but like this super successful hedge fund manager, and how he gets his start. And this isn't a spoiler. This is basically how the show starts. They explain how he basically benefited from the events of 9/11. And like, that's how like he profited off of that event and like became who he is. And it's like, if there's any better example of just randomness, like I don't know it, you know, yeah. Like, so
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
In basketball, you know, you see it with open threes all the time. And it's like the one of the biggest like analytics debates is like, can you know, meaningfully control what teams shoot on open threes, or are you just better off limiting those opportunities rather than trying to dictate their percentage, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
That's fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. But yeah, that's the book I've been reading. You said Charles had a question.
Yeah. So let's wrap this. So, Charles Araca, what's up, man? He asked, I'm just curious, as for both of us, what's your favorite memory for you from Ultimate and for me from being a pitcher?
Ooh, that's a good question. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I can. I think there's a, I've got probably, yeah, I got two of them. And it's funny because they're both more recent. And so playing like men's baseball here in Chicago. So we were talking offline about this Ultimate and baseball stuff, but you know, one state in high school as a freshman, played zero. I didn't play at all. So like, yeah, it was cool to win state, but I had no involvement in that. And then I think playing's been fun over the years, but I think the personal achievement, finally, I threw my first no-hitter a couple, like 3 or 4 years ago, which was awesome. And in the men's league I played in Chicago. And then we won the title here, like 3 or 4 years ago in the league. We played with like a dozen teams, and it's pretty competitive. And like, it was just like, it was all the stuff like you see on TV. Like I was the pitcher for the final out. And so we did the dog pile on the mound, and like, it was so fun because I had never been able to like truly experience that type of post game celebration in my life. And so like that moment is probably what I think about most. And like, even though, like I said, just a stupid Chicago men's league team, but it felt really good.
Hold up. Marc Gasol is going to the Grizzlies.
No, wait, really?
What? You think he's just going there to retire?
Wait, what? Where? I don't see this. Oh, wait. Oh, wow. Dude, can we talk about how I called this? I told you the second that the second that DeAndre got cut or got traded or saying he was going to get cut, I was like, he's going to the Lakers and Marc Gasol is gone.
Wow. And they gave up a second round pick to send him because they were in luxury tax and it saves them $10 million to move him.
Oh my God. Poverty franchise.
Wow.
Poverty franchise.
Wow. Dang. I'm looking forward to people debating whether Marc Gasol or Steven Adams should be starting.
Man,
they have many bigs. What are they going to do with all the bigs? They have Steven Adams, they have Marc Gasol, they have Xavier Tillman, they have Brandon Clark, they have Jerry Jackson Jr., which all those motherfuckers that said this means more Jerry Jackson at the five, fuck you. Wow. Okay.
That's fun. You still got to answer the question ultimate though.
Yeah, so I have a few ones, but I think the one that stands out to me the most, it's kind of a long story, but the short of it is that I was playing for the Tulane men's club team, and we were going to go to Santa Barbara for a tournament, and me and a few friends had decided to go up the Thursday rather than a Friday just to spend some time dicking around in LA / Santa Barbara / the beach or whatever. Just give us a day to do that. And so we got there early and, you know, we like spent the night camping on in Malibu, and then, you know, had a great time in Santa Barbara the next day. And while we were in Santa Barbara, we were actually just gotten ice cream. You know, we were waiting and eating ice cream. We get a call basically from the rest of the team saying they're not going to be able to make the tournament because it threatened to snow in New Orleans and all the flights got canceled. And so only 8 of us had made it out there. And this was in a completely different state. And there were some teams that were supposed to be really good. Like UC Davis at the time was like the 5th best team in the nation or something like that. And we, that Saturday, we ended up playing games and we won 3 out of our 4 games, including beating UC Davis in the final game on like Universe Point, which is basically like when the game is tied and the next score wins. And I caught that final goal, and it was just like an absolutely insane feeling. Just like 8 people, like completely, and it wasn't even like 8 of our best people, right? And I was actually like, I had a pretty massive ankle sprain at the time. I had taped up, had like several layers of tape on it, and like I was maybe half a bottle of ibuprofen in. But we won, and after we won, we spent the evening on the beach because the UC Santa Barbara campus is on the beach basically. And we just walked down to the beach and watched the sunset. And it was a great time.
Nice, man. That's really awesome. How did your body feel the next day?
Oh, I did not play the next day. And I actually could not play for the next 2.5 months because I fucked up my ankle that badly.
Oh no.
Yeah. It was, my doctor said I had a grade 2 sprain, and I had a ligament tear in it, and I was like, oh good. So yeah, it hasn't like I've never been the same level of explosive since that injury, but you know, whatever,
worth
yeah,
it
I
don't, it's worth it. Yeah, nice. Yeah that's like the one thing every year, like I feel like I haven't like felt aging that much. Like I'm 33 now, but I feel like the one thing that was really easy for me to tell how my body is aging is that how I feel the day after I pitch like 5 or 6 innings, because it has gotten way worse over the years. And so I haven't played since before COVID started. So it's been the longest time of my life actually not playing baseball. I'm trying to get back into it next year. But man, just not good. Not pretty.
I played little league, like almost every kid does. Right. And I was a pitcher as well. And the way we would do it, you know, it'd be 7 innings. And the way we would do it is we'd have an opening pitcher. I'd pitch the middle 3, and then we'd have a closing, you know, two series pitcher. And then every once in a while, like if I was on like a really hot streak, you know, the coach would keep pitching me. And there were some games where I just closed out the game, pitched the last 5. And like, I would go back to the dugout in between innings and my arm would literally be shaking and like on fire. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And then I'd go back next inning, just keep on pitching. And like, and then I'd be good in 2 days because I was like 12 years old. You know, I'd be good. Things would be fine.
Yep. Yeah. Right. That changes quickly. Don't think I anticipated how quickly.
Yeah. Right. Fun stuff. Right. Well, appreciate you guys listening in, and glad you guys got our live reaction to the Marc Gasol stuff. Poverty franchise.
Yeah, man.
Wow. I want to see what this does to the Vegas over-unders.
Why would it do anything?
I don't know. Maybe people are going to be like, oh, it's such a good fit. You have a veteran presence. They're going to be a good team.
I feel like
Marc Gasol can do everything that Jonas does.
I would argue it should do nothing to Memphis's over-under and reduce the Lakers over-under by a win.
Gosh. I hope DeAndre Jordan was promised a starting spot.
Oh, man. That would be just incredible. Oh, wait. Are they
Gasol and the Grizzlies will work together on a waiver.
Yeah, so he's not – okay. So I got it almost right. The wrong team is cutting him, but besides that, I got it right.
I guess I said it will allow him to remain in Spain with his family. Is that retirement?
Yeah, it seems like it.
I hope they retire. Yeah. Good for Memphis. Okay.